Live, we are on air now, and all I'm going to do is pop out a wee tweet. This is John Johnson on Radio Edutalk. I'm sitting here in Glasgow, as usual. This is the first Radio Edutalk I've done this session, although my co-conspirator David Noble's been really busy and has a lot queued up as well. But I'm really pleased tonight to be talking to Nicholas Mahan, McMahon. I'm
really McMahon, yeah.
McMahon, as usual, I murder everybody's name, because I bumped into you several times in different places at Teach Me and in Thornley Primary, but the thing we're going to talk about today is philosophy in the primary school, and that, when you say that at first, it almost seems this is quite a strange idea, and I've heard about it on and off over the years, but I've never talked to anybody that's done it for real. So maybe you could give us a wee introduction, Nicholas, to who you are, where you've been and things like that before we dig into the topic.
Well, like you said, I'm Nicholas McMahon, and I'm working at Thornley Primary School in Wishaw in North Lanarkshire, and I've been there for, this is my fifth year now, I've been there since my probation year, and I'm lucky to be kept on and then made permanent, so it's a great wee school. And so I've been there for 5 years, and during my probation year I decided I wanted to carry on with my studies and completed a postgraduate certificate in philosophy with children. Kind of got that idea and inspiration from my dissertation and some modules I completed at university, and that was a 2-year postgraduate, and then I've just been embedding it into my classroom ever since, and through the school as well, because it's a really great school for people wanting to try out new ideas and everybody sharing their experience. So we're a school with philosophy quite embedded into it, so it's great.
I mean, it sounds marvellous, and it's certainly looking around Thornley Primary, which you've done a few times from the walls and from your Twitter feed. It looks really sort of a vibrant school, and you've got a Twitter account for philosophy, haven't you?
Yeah, we do. Well, my personal philosophy, my personal Twitter is PS, and we have Thornley Primary is just the school one, but we also have I'm trying to think now, I can't even remember now. I think it's
I've got it here somewhere.
Have you got it? I should know that, shouldn't I?
You should, since you probably tweet it, but it's actually got its own, so your school's philosophy group has actually got its own Twitter account, which is
is
quite impressive really. But maybe you could tell us a wee bit of background about why we would do philosophy in a primary school, and then maybe go on to how, I think.
Sure. Well, like, fundamentally, like, philosophy with children is just a platform to develop talking, listening and thinking and questioning skills with children. But that's like a boiled down version, but it's so, so much more than that when you really unpack it. The model that I'm going to be talking about, the model that I'm trained within, is a community of philosophical inquiry. It's a model that not only is beneficial for the children, but it's beneficial for the teacher, because the teacher becomes less of a director of learning and becomes a facilitator of a dialogue. And one of your main roles as a facilitator is to introduce the children to a stimulus. This could be so many different things. It can be a storybook, a news article, a film clip, a piece of music, a collection of photographs, so many different things. But at its base, the stimulus has to kind of be loaded with like a philosophical potential, which I can come to later on. After interacting with the stimulus, the children will ask questions about it. So, for example, if they've just watched a short film clip, they'll ask questions on what they've seen and what they've heard, but also what the stimulus has made them think about. So even at that base, it's kind of generating... children are generating their own questions from something that they're introduced to. It's not questions that are forced upon them. And another role of the facilitator is you're taking down all of the children's questions, writing them all down, showing them that you value each of their questions. And then as you're writing them down, you're like striking off the ones in your head which are quite literal, and you're looking and searching for one that's got like philosophical potential in it. And then you're going to pick one of those questions, and after you pick one, you're just going to fire it back to the child who asked it, and you're just going to say to them, like, can you tell the group like a little bit about what you were thinking, try and answer your own question, and off they go, and the dialogue started. And after that, the circle that the children are sitting in is open for like any of the children to contribute. Before the dialogue even begins, the children like are introduced to some kind of guiding rules that will guide the dialogue. And one of these rules is that children who speak, anyone who speaks after the very first speaker must begin with like stating who they agree or disagree with, and stating the reasons why before making their points. So that's like one of the bits I love about community of philosophical inquiry, and I'll just call that COPE for short, is that the children need to agree and disagree with each other, and they're actually using that in their vocabulary, so it's building in so many fantastic like communication skills and thinking skills, as well as just talking and vocalising their point. But soon after, you can imagine like with children agreeing and disagreeing, really soon after the first speaker, there's like a community of children agreeing and disagreeing over like really wonderful philosophical concepts, like real life issues happening in the world today, over subjects that like some you would find in the academic reading that people believe that children aren't able to do. There's some people out there who think children aren't able to philosophise, children shouldn't be talking about these things, when I find that crazy, because they have some of the most insightful questions, some of the most insightful views in the world. And this kind of community of children are directing their own learning. They're listening and talking to each other, deciding who they want to agree with, who they want to disagree with, based on a question that's come from a child. It's not like a question that's been forced upon them. And it's a really child-centred approach, and I think that's why I really like really value philosophy with children, but this model of it, COPE, because I think it's the most effective one for me that I've found.
So, I mean, one of the things that I've now found your philosophy with children Twitter account, which is TPS_philosophy.
That's it.
And there's a marvellous photograph header at the top with the children who I presume are thinking hard and philosophising.
Definitely.
And I'm just wondering how you set this up so that it doesn't become a rammy.
Yeah, well, do you know, that's a really good point, because people that you've spoken to before, I've spoken to before, they kind of, as soon as you hear that it's kind of the debating side of it, or almost like some people presume it's going to become an argument because it's like the word disagreeing within it, but it's actually like the space that the children is really, really important. And the children like sit in a circle, I mentioned that before, the children sit in a circle, and like ideally pushing tables back, and whatever way that you make the space, the children should be like kind of in an equal circle. Nobody kind of, you know, somehow, and sometimes in classrooms, jutted off to the side, or maybe someone's in a lower seat or behind the desk. The children all sitting in a circle with nothing blocking them in between, and just equal space and apart, and that kind of structure allows everybody to see each other as an equal. And one of the other really important parts is that me as a teacher, I'm not in that circle, I'm on the outside of it, and ideally it would be great to have a space where the facilitator can move around the back of the circle as well, because you want to show the children they own the dialogue, and see even just that, them knowing that they own it, and the teacher's not, there's not a teacher sitting in a seat that they have to direct their viewpoints to, it kind of builds this responsibility and that you see within them, that they kind of are owning their dialogue. And and again, the guiding structure of like the kind of rules, some of the rules that you build into it, and that helps it not becoming a rammy. For example, children are told that after the first speaker, anybody can join in and anybody can contribute, but how they do that is by putting up their hand to let the facilitator know that they want to speak. Now, like, all they have to do is just raise your hand and let me see that I've seen their hand is up, and then they just put it back down, and then they need to wait, and they just wait until they're picked. And that can be a really long time for some of them, but they're just building up all their ideas and building up all their points in their head, ready for when they go. And somehow the rules and me being on the outside of it, them owning the circle, allows it to kind of just self-direct itself and for it not to become a rammy. But yeah, that's a really good question.
I mean, this is really interesting that you're actually stepping outside the circle and almost leaving it to them, so you are not the focus of anybody talking, so they're not talking to you particularly.
Not really, actually, and that's one of the things I do love about it. So the facilitator, like I said, will be in the outside of the circle, and after the first person's spoken, you're just kind of moving around, and what I try to do is to make sure I'm standing behind the person who is speaking, because naturally it's too hard for the person to twist their head right around to look at you to tell them what it is you're saying, so then they naturally just have to speak to the circle, to their community, and they're directing it out to them. And what we're kind of doing, the facilitator, I may be making the facilitator's job sound too easy. There is a lot of background there, of course. You're like trying to pick children who are going to best bounce off each other, whose hands you see fly up when someone's speaking. That's kind of letting me know that they really agree or really disagree with somebody, so I'm going to like go for them and pick them. But yeah, being in the outside of the circle helps me just kind of guide and make the dialogue even more philosophical, help pick children who are going to bounce off each other really well. But yet the children are directing it themselves, they're speaking to each other. And one thing that I regularly do, and some teachers have noted when they've came in to watch me teaching facilitating philosophy, will be that if a child's starting to speak and they'll be like, well, I disagree with John, and they're looking at me, so I'll just simply say, well, tell John then, and they just turn and they face them and then they start directing it to them. So it's just little kind of little words, little phrases like that to just kind of remind them that it's their dialogue and it's their space, and it works so well. I really love how it changes the role of me and the children.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a really interesting approach. Nicholas, can I just take a slight break to remind people, if you're listening to the show and you've got a question, if you are on Twitter, you can direct it towards myself at John Johnson, or Nicholas, who is at Mr. McMahon TPS. Just use the hashtag Edutalk, and I'll keep half an eye on that. So just if you've got a question, tweet it in and we'll try and pick it up. So the other thing, Nicholas, does it take a long time to get this established?
It can feel like it takes a wee while to establish, but it doesn't really. I feel like I've been doing it for ages now. Well, I have really been, because I've been doing it. This is my fifth year teaching, and I've been doing it every year, and then I've been doing it at uni, so it kind of feels like it's just kind of embedded for me. But I think some of the things that people have found difficult to embed into their class is not being the actual structure. The structure is fine, the setup is fine, but it's more the kind of the background knowledge, and that is where I would say that the two-year postgraduate that I was trained in was a really fantastic course to go on, because it really embedded the background philosophical knowledge to allow you to pick a philosophical stimulus or to pick a philosophical question when the children bring it. And I know that some staff in our school, that's the things that they've found more difficult is not so much the structure, but Nicholas, how do I know which question's going to get the most philosophical dialogue? Or Nicholas, how do I pick out the philosophical stimulus? So those are kind of more of the more difficult things to establish. But with like I would say to anybody, the more you practice and the more you keep trying out different stimuli, you're going to just start seeing things that work and things that don't. And you'll pick a question one time and it'll just be a bit of a dud, and it won't get very philosophical. It'll become a very literal conversation, but it won't become a philosophical dialogue, and that's the change. You want to try and take it from just a regular kind of circle time talk into this philosophical dialogue, and that's sometimes where people kind of struggle.
And do you take a long time to introduce it to the children, or do you just start with the question and roll with it?
It's really quite so I would say a philosophy session can last from about as short as maybe about 30 minutes to can last till about maybe an hour. Sometimes some really amazing ones have just lasted and you just keep going with it. But when I start with the children, I'll just go in and say we're doing philosophy, so can we get into our positions, we'll move the desks, move the seats, and then I'll say, so this is our stimulus today, and if it's one that I have to read or play or watch or anything like that, I just put it on and then tell the children after it's finished, I'm going to take your questions, and then I take the questions, and it's just really quick. It's just, you're just moving straight into it. as quickly as you can so that you can get the most amount of time for dialogue. Some of the other things that people have, and I even found myself quite difficult to begin with, is so you introduce a stimulus and the children interact with it, and then they ask questions about it, but the taking of the questions can feel like a really long time. So the children are all sitting in their space, they've watched or interacted with the stimulus, and you're taking their questions. And sometimes if it's been a really successful stimulus, you'll have like every single hand, like 20, 30 hands up, and you're going down and you're taking down all those questions. So how I've evolved it into how I take down the questions, I used to write it down, but now I just type it really quickly into the notes on my phone so that I can screenshot them and post them onto the Thornley Twitter, the Thornley Philosophy Twitter. But I do know that the taking down the questions can feel like quite a long time because the children are just really silent. But that's what I say to them. While I'm taking down those questions, I say to the children, I'm saying that, like, just be patient. It's just wait for your question to be taken. But as you're waiting for your question to be written down, think of the different questions that are being asked and how would you answer those. And even in itself, before the dialogue's even begun, that's a great skill that's been developed, of patience and waiting and keeping those ideas in your head. And so that's one part.
And do you think that the idea of doing philosophy is in? I mean, getting children to wait for that length of time. Are you doing this with the whole class?
This is with 20. Well, this year I have 21 children, which is, it feels so much smaller than last year having 26. But so I've been able to do it with 26. I've been able to do it with 14, and my final BEd placement year, I had a class of 30, and I've been able to do it with them. The model I told you that I use is Community Philosophical Inquiry. That's like a run at Strathclyde University, if anybody fancies looking up the course, by Dr. Claire Cassidy. But ideally, like the structure that was created by Catherine McCall, it's a smaller number that they suggest a philosophy session being used with. And again, like, this can be used with adults as well. We've had staff philosophy sessions, and I know that there's some really fantastic work out there of people using philosophy in high schools and community centres, lots of different places. But it's maybe ideally about 12 to 15 people, but it's possible and it's doable, as like you can see through our Twitter, that you can do it with big classes. Mm-hmm. And there is a long time for people to be waiting at times, but if you really scroll through the Thornley Philosophy Twitter, you'll see a fantastic wee video of a boy from my class last year, and this was for a presentation that I was doing, and I was asking them, like, what are some, because I had those children for 3 years, some of them, so I wanted to know, like, after 3 years, 2 years of doing philosophy, what do you find some of the difficulties? And this wee boy, one of his difficulties was saying that during the dialogue, your hands, you might not be chosen, you put your hand up, you might not be chosen for a wee while, so you're sitting and you're thinking, like, I disagree with him, I disagree with her, I agree with him, I agree with her, and building all these ideas up in his head, and he says in the video that, and then when he's eventually chosen, he just, like, explodes, and he can say, I disagree with you, and state all these reasons why, and that was a difficulty for him, but yeah. For me, I'm thinking, that's fantastic, what amazing thinking skills that are being developed there, like what amazing communication skills are being developed there, to have to wait and build up all these ideas and think of a logical way to get across your opinion and your view, as well as agreeing and disagreeing with people. I think it's such a fantastic tool of developing thinking skills as well as talking and listening skills.
Well, yeah, I mean, it sounds great for talking and listening. And I mean, you mentioned the fact that you did this course and you're recommending folk would go on a course, and maybe we can get a link to put in the show notes later on about
that. Yeah, definitely.
That. But I just wonder if somebody wasn't going to go on the course, mm-hmm. could they, I mean, you're saying other members of your school are managing to do it, I presume with your support, but is it something you think somebody could read a bit and then pick up and try out, or?
Definitely, and that's the thing, I think, as much as I think the course really helps you become a better facilitator, I think it's better people out there trying philosophy and embedding philosophy within to your classroom than not doing it at all. And like I said, it's trial and error. I've been doing it for 5 years now, and there's still some stimuli that I pick, and they just don't work as well as I thought they would. But for me, how I collect most of my resources now, is through my own social media and through like just the internet and things like that. And we all scroll through things like Facebook and Twitter and all these things, and we see film clips and we see news articles or little photographs about things happening in the world just now. And so much now that I've been in primary seven, my philosophy has kind of moved towards and not using so many like kind of textbooks or like children's books as my stimulus, but using like real current events out there. So like just recently, like one of the resources that we were using was an article which some listeners might think, well, primary seven, that's so extreme, but it was an article about like an honour killing in Pakistan over like a woman who refused to marry someone that she wanted to that she didn't want to marry, and she had someone that she loved that she wanted to marry instead. And that's such like a deep like issue that's happening in the world just now that links in with our global goal. In our class, we're looking at gender equality and reduced inequalities, and that's primary sevens that are talking about like real life issues happening in the world. But these aren't just like real life issues. All these issues that are around us in the world are deep rooted with philosophy. There's such moral questions of right and wrong. And to come back to your question, I think that's one of the best places that somebody can start. I know so many schools are now like rights and responsibilities and rights charters are embedded into their class, and that's one of the best ways that you can embed philosophy, because rights at its heart has like a moral ideology of like right and wrong. And one of the books that I used when I was in primary three was Ahmed and the Feather Girl by Jane Ray, and it's about a boy who's kept in a circus, and they find a golden egg, and this girl hatches out of the golden egg, and instead of her just being able to fly free, she's caged with the circus, and she's made to perform, and she has a very unhappy life. And these primary threes were able to see that this girl didn't have her rights, and then that's what inspired our first philosophical dialogue. And from there, children are talking about right and wrong, good and bad, all these issues, and issues that people have opinions on, people can agree and disagree on. And I think that's how I would say to anybody to start: find something that has got like that kind of has got clear messages in it of maybe right and wrong, good and bad, and then that's a kind of way to start off. And a lot of resources I used last year were to do with animal rights, because again, that was just something my class from last year really like found quite inspiring to be able to talk about and to voice their opinion and to agree and disagree on. So that was a very long answer for that, but I hope that helped.
Really valuable. And what I was thinking when you started, you said that one of the questions you were talking about was honour killings, and mm-hmm. I'm scrolling through the philosophy site here, and another question you're asking about is about the lesbian couple being denied wedding cakes.
Yeah, that's like that's been one that I've used quite a few times, and it's been fantastic. It really has.
And I mean, I think some people would maybe hold back from both of these topics
with
primary seven, and they might be worried about a bit of pushback from parents and things like that. And mm-hmm. How have you found that?
Well, the kind of opposite, in fact, and parents have like shown quite a lot of interest at our school and have been quite like surprised and kind of amazed that their children are coming home and talking about things that they're also talking about, things that they're seeing in the media and things that they're seeing in the news. And not only that, they have formed their own opinions on it. And I think if we look at Curriculum for Excellence and look at Education Scotland and everything just now about learning for sustainability is like one of the things right at the core and heart of like our curriculum. And if we're talking about children living in the world now and being citizens just now, then I don't see a better platform than philosophy with children to actually get children talking and being passionate about these kind of subjects. Like, you also see if you scroll through that, like I was talking about some of the animal rights resources that we used, those like were stimulus that I brought to the group, the community, and they had a dialogue about it. But then that also inspired like projects within the class. So from reading about one of the rhino crisis and a rhino that was hunted and killed, that inspired a campaign in our class, and it formed so much literacy and topic work based on how we could promote the idea of saving the rhinos. So these are like issues in the world, or sometimes issues that are quite deep, and that some children, some people might think, oh, I don't know if children should be talking about these, but again, like I said, that these are things happening in the world, and I don't think that that children aren't able to talk about them, and I don't think that they don't have the skills and abilities to be able to voice their opinions on them. So in my terms, like, I've not had any like pushback from parents in terms of the kind of things that we've been talking about, but again, I've been in primary 7 for 3 years now, and like I said, last year that was a class of children who I've been in philosophy with for quite a few years. So people who were maybe wanting to start, I don't maybe think jumping straight into something might be the way to go, but I wouldn't hold off very much longer after if you feel like philosophy is something your class are really responding to.
Yeah.
There's a wee article like I found online, which I'm sure anybody can search for, and you can find like some sort of version of it, of a teacher reading a text. A girl's phone went off in class, and the teacher read the text message out to class, but then it was about like something to do with the girl's family, and the parents were really angry, and that's always a great one I've found to start off philosophy, especially within either four, five, six or seven, because it's issues that the children kind of could feel quite personal about, and they could feel quite passionate about. There's quite clear roots of like right and wrong within it, and it's kind of like a good one to use at the beginning of the year to help establish like what makes a good teacher, what makes a good pupil, and to kind of help create your kind of charter or your kind of guiding rules of your class year. So there's so many things. Truly, whatever's happening in the world just now, stimulus for philosophy, but I'm talking a lot about like right and wrong and these kind of stimulus, but there's so many other things, like the way that we were trained in the postgraduate was like looking at the different philosophical themes that there are. So like, again, you said at the beginning, philosophy with children, it sounds so intense when you say that, and these philosophical themes could also sound intense, talking about things like epistemology and metaphysics and ethical philosophy and political philosophy. But those are the kind of realms that the kind of themes we were trained in looking for resources that would tie into those. So for example, political philosophy, I've used things before, looking at a news article about how much money was going into fixing the Queen's palaces at the time, but then also comparing and contrasting that to liberty and housing problems happen currently. So that was a great one. There's also been ones about time, like I found a poem about time and like number being a man-made construction, and like the actual philosophy of time. What is time? How do we know what time is? So they don't always have to be as so serious and as the ones that we were talking about, although I do think those are fantastic for building like learning for sustainability into the root of your classroom. But philosophy can be really fun as well, using fairy tales like the Gingerbread Man. Goldilocks is a fantastic one that I've used before, like spinning that on its head about, like, again, these questions come from the children, but one child asked, which always sticks out in my head, why are people so angry at the three bears when a wee girl's broken in somebody's so it can be really fun and really funny as well. So I do think it's one of the best platforms you can have in your class, and I think it would be great if people just go for it.
One of the things you sort of alluded to was the fact that it could generate what somebody as old fashioned as me would probably call topic work. So it could do that, but the other thing I'm wondering, I mean, if children are talking about these things seriously, does it affect their real life thinking? I mean, have you got children going home and asking their mums to become vegans, for instance?
On you go.
I'm just wondering about the responsibility there of framing that, you know.
Yeah, well, I think it's a good question, but again, I think like we were talking about with ability and everything that we're kind of aiming for through a curriculum for excellence, I think that philosophy actually kind of is a part of the responsibility in a way. It's addressing these issues with children, it's allowing them to talk about them, and even in the fact that the circle, the way that the community of philosophical inquiry ends is when the time is up, you just say that you pick a last speaker and they're kind of speaking, and then the children don't really know that, but you'll say, okay, and that's all the time that we have today. And like, you, if you scroll through the Twitter, you'll find a couple of videos, and the noise, I think, is one of the best bits of philosophy, because you just hear like, no, ah, and all these children who are so passionate about wanting to finish expressing their view, who didn't get the chance to, they have to just know that the dialogue's over and they need to move back to their seats. And the best part is when they're taking their seats back, they're moving back and they're talking, here, you see that thing you said back then? I still disagree with you because I think this, this and this. And then they continue off into the playground. And that, for somebody listening, could think, oh, what, so you're getting the kids all riled up and then you're sending them off to argue? But it's not. They're passionately talking about things that they feel passionate about. Again, it's not being forced upon them. It's their own questions. It's questions they have about the world, and you're giving them a platform to kind of address that. And the way that I speak to the children about it as well, especially in primary seven, throughout our whole lives, and I say, even at my point now, at my dad's point, at your point, there's always going to be people who agree or disagree with us. You might have an opinion, you might have a view, and you might think you've voiced it in the best way you can, but there's always going to be someone who will can disagree with you. And even building that resilience and determination in with children, I think, is a great responsibility, knowing that you have to have these tools to be equipped moving through the world, being able to voice yourself, but not in a way that you're going to argue and shout with people, but you can do it in a mannerly way where you can tell them why you disagree with someone and addressing the actual thing, rather than some children who find it really difficult to vocalise what it is that they're angry at. And just so this is helping, I feel, direct a vocabulary and a kind of skill of communication to allow children to tell each other what it is that they're not happy with, or that they are happy with, and why.
So, just there, you were speaking about, you know, sending the children off to the playground, and I'm thinking, have you noticed any in the school, any knock-on effect of doing philosophy on the children, on like, how they got on with their peers, or behaviour in classroom, or attitude, or anything else? Does it run across these things so they find it easier to settle arguments, or?
I think that's a question I've been asked a few times as well, and I wouldn't say that philosophy is a magical cure potion for us. Last year, that was some children that I worked with for 3 years, who were doing philosophy for the 3 years, and there was times in certain children who they were in class during the philosophical session, and expressing themselves so fantastically, being able to agree and disagree, but who were still on the playground, not able to resolve their own issues, and that playground arguments. And that can be due to a number of factors, but again, that's it at certain times, whereas at other times, you can see them using that in class, or maybe outside of class, certain individuals as well, who can kind of, we use agree and disagree when we're in philosophy, but using it in different situations, in the classroom, out in the playground. So I do think that with that, like, continual use, and for me, philosophy is, and try to be, like, a weekly part of our school life. And I think the more and more you do it, I think that vocabulary and that kind of way of thinking would become embedded in the children. And I have seen it in some children, maybe not in all children who are not taking it from the philosophy session out to the playground, but I do see it. And I think the more and more that people do it, and the more it becomes like another part of school life, then I do think we would see that. Yeah.
Right. I mean, that sounds really good. And I'm realising we've talked about half an hour now, and I just, just like to sort of, if say I was thinking this sounds like a great idea, I'm not going to take the time to go and do a postgrad, but I'd like to try this in the classroom. So I basically need a question, And explaining the rules to the children wouldn't take that long. Is that the, you would really just be talking through the fact that we're going to take turns and that you're standing outside?
Pretty much, like, it's no more than a couple of minutes. Like, I could kind of run through how I say it to the children. Would that help?
I think that'd be really interesting. This would be like the first time this group of children have ever come across philosophy.
Well, that's a good point as well, because every time that I do philosophy, I introduce the rules, and even after 5 years doing it, I do it because it's just a nice way to settle the children into their community, like, circle, and it, like I said, doesn't take very long. So, like, I'm trying to think now. So how I would start will be, so we're about to watch this video here, and after we watch this video, as soon as it's finished, I want you to just to put up your hand if you have any questions, based on what you've seen and heard, or anything that you think about, or you've thought about as you've been watching. After I've taken down all the questions, I'm going to pick one question, and the question that I pick, I'm going to just fire it back to that person. So, say it was John's question, I'll fire it back to John, and I'll ask John to tell us a wee bit about what he was thinking and why he asked that question. And after that, the floor and the space is open to anybody who wants to join in. And all you have to do is to put your hand up and let me see that you want to speak. After that, after you're chosen, all you need to do is to start by stating who you agree or disagree with and your reasons why. Sometimes in philosophy, I might ask you to redefine a word. So if you're asked to redefine a word, you could do that for me. And when the time is up, the time is up, and we can progress through. And that's really pretty much it. I've missed a couple out there, only maybe like two, but it's not much longer than that. It's a couple of minutes, and then that's it. You start.
But you could do that with a class that you haven't talked to about philosophy before.
Yeah, I think so. Well, when I've went around our school, and I've done it from primary one up to primary seven, and I've kind of introduced philosophy a wee bit and just asked, "Does anyone know what philosophy? Has anyone heard philosophy before?" And usually, you'll hear everybody say, "No, they've not." And then what I'll just say is that philosophy is something that we do in our school, and it's a really great way of talking, listening, and thinking. And we're going to be using it to develop our talking, listening, thinking. I introduce it, and that's it. And we start, because that's really all they need to know, that they're going to be talking, listening, and thinking, and those rules can help guide it and help structure it. And those rules, I'm thinking now, people might be thinking they must be like really restrictive, or they might be really kind of imposing. But like through the Thornley Twitter philosophy, or through my own Twitter, anybody could tweet me or private message and ask, like, could you explain to me what the rules are just quickly? Because it really is only about five things that help guide the philosophy. And like I said about the redefining a word, and really great, because children could be initiated from a question about the article. So, say we're talking about, like you said, the lesbian couple denied a wedding cake. That can start as that, but as the dialogue moves through, because it's so child-centered and so child-directed, it soon doesn't just become about that. It becomes about lots of things, about them agreeing, disagreeing. So I kind of say to people that I'm talking to about it, if you imagine the circle that they're sitting in, like an invisible web, going across of people who are agreeing and disagreeing. So initially, it could be, I agree with John, because he says that why should we be denied a cake just because of who we love? And then people are agreeing and disagreeing with that. But as my role as a facilitator, I'm going to jump onto a word like love, or a word like right or wrong, and just say, well, John, could you redefine what you mean by love? Or could you tell me what love means? Or could you tell me what. Then you'll give me your definition, and then somebody's hand might fly up, because they'll be like, well, actually, I disagree with John's definition of love, because I think this. So then there's a second web that is spun across as well as the first one, and can you see, like, as it goes through over that time, there's all these connecting philosophical threads across, and people are not just agreeing and disagreeing about one question. Soon that question can be quite far past, and we've moved right in by, like, careful selection of people and careful questioning of the facilitator to make it a more philosophical dialogue.
That just it sounds marvellous, the way you say it. And again, the other question is that how well are the rules kept?
Because
I would do exactly this. I would interrupt if I was sitting in a circle,
You would jump in and butt in, is that what you mean?
Yeah.
Well, you do find initially, and depending on the type of class that you have and the children within it, that can be something initially that is quite difficult for children. But again, like I said, I think that's a great tool in itself, developing those skills of like patience and waiting and building those thoughts up. And you do get children who will... Let's say you're speaking about something and somebody just jumps in and is like, I seen on TV that you do, and they try to kind of counter your point. I just like simply say, oh, okay, John, right, sorry I keep using your name.
But okay. I'll say, I'm the person that butt in.
You're that person, so you did say that. But I would just say, oh, if you agree or disagree, make sure you put your hand up and I'll come to you. And then they'll just like stop talking and they'll kind of mute themselves, they'll fling their hand up, and you'll see some children pure bouncing trying to catch your attention in your hand, and you'll just say, I've seen your hand, you can put it down. But like that wee boy in that video, I think it's a brilliant skill as well, developing all that waiting and thinking and building up your thoughts and then being able to express them at that point. But the rules, they aren't, like the way that I said earlier, aren't really super restrictive, but they're really great guiding rules, and they help structure of the philosophy and they help keep it child directed. And soon the children, I think, kind of recognise the kind of importance of them and seeing that you will get to express yourself at a certain point. So eventually that kind of buttoning and that jumping in does kind of move away. And another time that you see it is, like I told you, before the dialogue begins, you take down all the children's questions. When you're taking down the questions, sometimes a child might be in the middle of asking a question as I'm typing it down, and somebody will just kind of butt in and be like, but no, and like try to speak at that point, and I'll just say, wait, remember, this is just the time where we take questions. We'll get a time to agree and disagree when the dialogue begins, and then soon they're like, oh, okay, and then they just get ready for the dialogue. So they do kind of help keep the structure there, and that structure then helps keep it a really child-centred dialogue.
And do you introduce the word philosophy to them at the start as well?
Like I said, I would just say to them that philosophy is a word that's got lots of different meanings in different places, but how we're it's based on thinking, so it's a philosophy is something that we're going to use to develop our talking, listening, and our thinking skills.
Brilliant. I mean, it just sounds like a marvellous thing, the way you describe it. It sounds as if it's going great guns in your school.
Thank you very much.
I hope other folk can pick up and, follow on from that. As I listen to you, I am completely convinced that it'd be a great idea. Whether I could carry it out or not, I'd have to wait and see.
I want the parting message to be that, like, sometimes it can, when you're speaking about it, it sounds, wow, that sounds amazing, and little things that I might have mentioned about structures and about guiding kind of rules and things might make people put people off, or trying to pick a philosophical stimulus might put people off. All I would say is, give it a shot. At the kind of base and boiled down version, to get really started and inspired by it, you might then go on and want to carry on with the postgraduate. You might not, but to just try, all I would say is the kind of main kind of features of community philosophical inquiry that would make philosophy in your class really special would be to get the children in a circle. A circle where they're all equal spacing apart, make sure you're on the outside of that circle, and just introduce them to something that you think is like an unanswerable question, or a kind of like a resource that's got lots of kind of philosophical ideas packed into it, or even just start with like fairy tales, reading a fairy tale to the children, reading like storybooks, picture books, because they've always got great themes and stories behind them. Read it to the children, ask them to ask any questions about what they they've heard and what they've thought about, and just pick one and go for it. And the other one thing is to make sure that you get the children to agree and disagree with each other, because I think that's the one thing that really sets Community Fills off going quite apart, because that starting every sentence with "I agree and disagree with" helps the children like think not only about their own opinion, but their own opinion in conjunction with other people. And then I think that's how that community and that debating and that builds, you know.
Brilliant. And I keep on asking, I think this is my third last question, because I've asked two earlier last questions. But the other thing I'm thinking about is how that fits in with the week in school.
Yeah, definitely. And again, it's a commonly asked question as well, because we're so under like pressure to get so much in, and we've got such a packed timetable as it is. But for me, like, I see philosophy as like a talking and listening tool, as well as a thinking tool. And for me, that is literacy, and all those talking and listening outcomes. Like, I feel that philosophy needs a part within my timetable, and I replace that with I replace that in the place of things like a circle time, or like a kind of news time, or things like that. And on all those times, I'm not like saying that those things aren't beneficial, because they all have their own advantages as well. But for me, I think there are so many advantages that philosophy covers that I kind of try to use that in those places. And like I said, with the talking and listening outcomes that you're covering, the health and wellbeing outcomes that you're covering, that I think half an hour, 40 minutes, that I just try and make there a time that I can fit it in. But I say I try to do it every single week, but then there's this week kind of, and sometimes it isn't possible to do it every week, but I try to make sure if I don't do it once a week that I'm doing it every fortnight. And I just, like I said, I make a space for it, because the benefits that you see in terms of talking and listening, in terms of expression, thinking skills, creativity, all these things, it's wonderful.
Right, and you certainly make it sound really worthwhile and wonderful. We'll put this up on the EdgeTalk site as an archive over the next couple of days. I'll add your Twitter account and the Thornley Philosophy Twitter account, which I've had a wee skim through before and during this podcast, and it looks really fascinating.
And I would encourage anyone that is listening or goes to listen or sees this in the next few days to message me. I think Twitter is one of the best teaching tools that we have, and I'm more than happy to take any questions, take any emails or private messages about any ideas, or to share any resources that I have already. So very, very encouraging of anyone to message me and to get philosophy started within their classrooms.
Brilliant, and you've certainly given us a whole heap to think of today. For the people listening, there seems to be quite a few. There's a few people saying thanks to you, Nicholas, on Twitter, and there's a few quiet ones I can see in the back end here. So thanks for listening, folks. I hope you've enjoyed the show. EdgeTalk is on at least once a week over the next wee while. I'm hoping to do some more shows on Wednesday. I have been really bad at getting anything organised, so if you're interested in having a chat online, drop me a tweet or a DM or something, or, you know, there's lots of ways to contact me online. I'd be delighted to hear from you. But I think I'll just echo Caroline Braley, who's just tweeted, "Absolute cracker of an At EdgeTalker edition tonight, but philosophy in the classroom, thanks very much." So I don't think I could say much more than that, Nicholas. So
yeah, that's very nice.
For the folk out there, I'm just going to hang up the broadcast. I'll say goodnight. Cheers, folks.